interrupting the current, a neo-Euchronial climate change behaviorally controlled energy star postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricket Tube Busting episode BTWRLM 489. We're a week late and we are having a serious connection problem. I've been cut off. So Vince at RLM is making the workaround. Apologize for the difficulties. Apologize for not being here when you were expecting me. And it's just one of those things. We're working hard to clear up a whole bunch of serious problems that have developed, and it's going to potentially threaten this broadcast. In the meantime, Vince is doing a great job to do the workarounds here. And this is going to be an odd broadcast, just to let you know. We're going to probably do this pre-recorded because I don't have the connection quite to you yet. We can send a file through circuitous routes. Anyway, this was an interesting couple weeks. We're going to have to play it by ear, but you're listening at this point to the most jam-packed minute in radio for 2 hours. Behind a woodshed. Break free. No stopping. There's that much information, and I never really get to it. So let's get to it as we start to see what we're seeing in the future about how we want to do well. We're told and bought into stuff. They tell us to do your part. They're selling us down the river, and we don't know it till too late. Maybe not too late on this one, and the fact that we get to see it now. We should start sending the word far and wide to stay away from all of this nonsense that they're doing, where they start to impose how we're supposed to do things, impose upon the system and the government to keep the infrastructure up, not degrade it. There's thousands of Xcel Energy Rewards customers were hot after losing control of thermostats. So I understand the interesting wordplay there, but that these were the rewards customers. You got your little star from school, folks? You're the special group. Thousands of metro area Xcel Energy customers were unable to control their home thermostats earlier this week when temperatures climbed into 90 degrees. Can I interject that we've been sitting over 100 for almost a week now? But anyway, moving back to this. Hook up to these guys. Voluntary participants. I don't know, I'm beginning to believe I should have maybe not interject too much. But here we have your consent. You're buying into it. Set up for the takedown. Voluntary participants in the company's AC Rewards program allow Xcel to control their, quote, smart home thermostats during hot summer days when demand for electricity and air conditioning is at its peak. Typically, the program participants, quote, have the ability to opt out of control events at any time, close quote, according to the Xcel description on its website. Do we have a bridge I can sell you? On Tuesday, as temperatures rose into lower 90s in the metro area, Xcel took complete control and locked thermostats because of an emergency situation. This was a very unique circumstance where we had to call this, said Emmett Romine, Vice President of Customer Solutions and Innovation with Xcel. Your reward solution is to be controlled by their innovation. This is the statements that are coming out of the future controllers in your life. They claim at the very end that this is not something we ourselves are triggering very often in the future. Well, again, they lied to you in the first place. Now they're going to continue. This is how your life is going to be controlled. They bribe you, induce you into take on rewards. And then this is your reward for doing your part, folks. And this is the thing we're going to have to start conveying to people, I suggest. Get the proof for this. Don't just let it rest and sit around. We're watching the thing unfold right in front of us, and I'm stunned that there's not many more people paying attention to it. There may be quite a few, but they're not enough, apparently. California banning new gas-powered cars for 2035. I think I reported quickly on this in the past, but here's another report. Banning gas-powered cars by 2035. In a move to combat pollution in the state, California passed a law Thursday banning a new gas-powered vehicles by 2035. It's a move mired with questions in affordability and feasibility among car makers. Neil Baudette, an auto reporter for the New York Times, joined CBS News Tanya Rivero and Donald DeCoppel to hash out the pros and cons of the new law. This is not about pollution. This is the conflation to bring in the political change called climate change. They've figured out how to do a lot of the pollution problems. So this is they're going to try and get rid of your gas-powered cars. As I've told you before, as a miner, I'm going to find it interesting how they're going to impose that upon a miner. And they didn't. Actually, when you look at the law, there's a stipulation that says we're practicable. And so a lot of you are going to have to start figuring out how to make it not practicable. We talked about they were targeting all the small engines with the gardeners, and the gardeners were going to have to go to get power packs. I don't know how that's practicable, but that's what they were going to force them to, so they get rid of so-called pollution from small engines. So, understand now, you're looking at the sustainable climate change agenda right now coming on board. They're going to get rid of probably the most efficient motor system that we have at this point, and likely maybe even more green when you look at the totality of electric. And so let's put our minds forward. We got 2035. Okay, there's no more gas-powered cars. What they're going to go now is go after all the other cars. Your gasoline starts to go down. The supplies start to go down. So they're going to force you out that way as well on the ones that have the gasoline engines. Then the electric is now going to have to take over. That's, I think, the only other thing, is there, unless you're going to use public transit. Maybe you're going to get a scooter. Yeah, you see how the plan starts to roll out? You're going to ride your bike, folks? Well, get us right into the future. They're already telling us the future. No more gas-powered cars. And then California asks residents to avoid charging electric vehicles due to the blackout risk days after unveiling new gas car ban. So when you look into the future, I don't know of anybody that could look into a nice rosy future about how this is all being worked out, as the people in the sustainable decarbonization crowd are getting their way. They're getting their way. They're going to get their way because most of the people, the residents, don't actually get up and do a darn thing. So here we have it. This is the future. You have thermostats being shut off, not controlling your own way of your existence on their suggestion that they claim they'll never do. California turns right around and says, well, your electric car that's supposed to be so green, well, it can't be running. How much production you're going to get? How many things are going to be supplied to you with all this nonsense coming down? So it's in the news. The notice is in the future. I don't even understand how this is even rational, that it even comes down and it even makes the news. But here we are. Okay, so now consider this. You got no power. You're not supposed to hook up your car. You're asked not to hook up your power to your electrical vehicle, which, remember, is going to skyrocket. There's going to be a monopoly on electric cars because they've outlawed another mode. They have you. You're not getting away with it. And so then you hear this story. Harbor Air successfully completes first point-to-point test flight in an electric plane. The big deal here is that it had extra charge by the time it flew 45 miles. And this is coming from a guy, I think this is the coolest stuff. An electric plane that flies. How cool is that? Some people may not think it is. I think it's cool. Electric cars, I think they're cool. Are they the answer? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I would have never thought really to see in my day and learning about electrical cars and things and being involved with them that a plane could fly. And this happened to be the battery density thing. But here we have it. Pretty neat stuff. Seaplane airline Harbor Air continues to make progress towards making its entire fleet of planes electric by successfully completing its first point-to-point test flight in Canada. Kanukistan, here you are, right on the front edge of it. The E-Beaver electric plane flew 45 miles with plenty of reserve power left when it landed. Okay, there was a one-way flight with plenty of reserve. How are they going to actually make that work in a commuter capacity? And then the government says, oh, don't plug it in. Again, I'm always tossed about these things. This is pretty neat technology. And yet you see that they're utilizing it to scam everybody. Anybody who's doing, watching around, looking and seeing the tests that are done on the pickups right now, on the batteries, and the promotion that they say the capacity of the, for the performance of the trucks falls, maybe, I think it's half of what they say it can do. Electric is, I think, very, very good for commuter traffic things where you have point-to-point charging stations and it's not totally that far, where you can travel to your job and go back and forth. I think that's probably the best use for it, actually. But you start to do any work, any real power you need, real power to do something, tow a trailer, haul a load, electric's not going to do it. Oh, they'll tell a car, well, an airplane can fly 45 minutes or 45 miles. That's pretty cool. But is that real, really inside something that's going to be functional? You're not going to do an air service one way. And so just keep watching how this news is rolling out to the future of your life. It's just not looking so good. People are letting it happen, and I don't even understand that part. Let's go even higher. Okay, we start on the ground. We start into the air. Let's go even higher. When they bring this technology in, what are they going to? They need coverage. Musk, SpaceX, and T-Mobile plan to connect mobile phones to satellites, boost cell coverage. So on the one hand, that's great. People can get connected. Cell phones are a very neat tool. But that's not what it's going to be used for. And they're telling you here, you won't need cell towers anymore. It'll definitely go to the satellite. It's a next generation satellite technology with a larger antenna so that you can communicate from your cell phone directly to that satellite or a satellite. And they can get everywhere now. To do what? Keep tabs on you. Keep tabs on what you do. Keep tabs on how you do it. On who you do it with. I think, again, a lot of this technology just is amazing. Pretty neat. Would have loved to have it when I was younger. But look what they're doing to it. Oh, no, we're going to outlaw gas motors. There's not a lot of electrical vehicles that can do the things that diesel trucks do for how they do it. And they're not going to replace that. No one's pointing out, oh, it's going to be some kind of functionality thing. No, you're not even adaptability. No, all that's wrong. There's just not the energy there. But they're going to make sure that they have coverage to control and watch. Well, if they also have control and can watch, and they're saying they're working into the actual 5G speeds, they can also do that electric car, the electric truck transportation condition that the federal government wants, which is the only reason for it. Well, excuse me, there was two reasons. Keeping track of autonomous trucks was another. So as far as much as I like hearing what the ideas about Elon Musk are, they're all tied into the tying you up, putting you in a prison, that they can stop your thermostat, shut off your gas, shut off your fuel, shut off your electric car. You can't opt out. Let's go even higher. Go into space, satellites, for neat technology. We're going to get bigger satellite antennas so we can look and find every mobile phone wherever it is. Don't need cell towers no more. While Congress admits UFOs, but not man-made, says threat exists increasing exponentially. So this is just one of those throw-out stories, I guess, to keep us all entertained and afeared. After years of revelations from strange lights in the sky, first-hand reports of Navy pilots about UFOs and governmental investigations, Congress seems to have admitted something startling in print. It doesn't believe UFOs are, quote, man-made. Buried deep in a report, which has a link to my link here, that's an addendum to the Intelligence Authorization Act of fiscal year 2023, a budget that governs Americans' clandestine services, Congress made two startling claims. The first is that, quote, cross-domain transmedium threats to the United States national security are expanding exponentially, close quote. The second is that it wants to distinguish between UFOs that are human in origin and those that are not, quote, temporary non-attributed objects, or those that are positively identified as man-made after analysis, will be passed to appropriate offices and should not be considered under the definition of unidentified aerospace undersea phenomena, the document states. So here we are. We don't even understand our space. Military claims to have total dominance. Don't even know what's out there. All the cameras in the world haven't been enough. All the radar in the world hasn't been enough. And yet they make this stuff keep on going on. Yeah, the increasing exponential threat is the decarbonization crowd in our world, the sustainable infiltration in our world. But we're going to point to things in the sky and lights in the sky we don't even know about and say that's some kind of a worry. People are in government destroying the nation, and Congress looks out into space and something or into the skies that it hasn't yet to identify. Claims it's something important. So getting back to ground and where they're going with all this, you can be bribed, folks. You're a loyalty customer, remember? Oh, you're a rewards customer. You get your little star for doing so good on the refrigerator. You can put it on your refrigerator. Maybe they'll let it run. We see how they're going to do it. They did it in COVID. They did it with the bribe. I told you that this was how you're watching the system work up. They bribe your officials. No one seems to look past it. They give you a little kudo. You get a little more points here and there. Travel points, whatever they call them. Loyalty points. You get discounts on your food. Oh, that's one story I forgot to mention. These customers for the thermostat lockouts, they got $100 credits. Credits, no less. Credits are just prorated, if you will, loyalty leashes, as far as I can tell. Like rebates. They're not giving you anything. You think they're giving you. But France is going to give 4,000 euro to people who trade in their car for an e-bike. This is what real climate change policy looks like. Yeah, that's what it is. They want you on your bikes. With your little hat. Your little safety cap. France's government increased the size of the subsidy it offers to people who trade in their gas-powered cars for electric bikes to as much as 4,000 euro. That's just less than $3,976 per person. The money is meant to incentivize people to ditch their polluting modes of transportation in favor of cleaner, more environmentally friendly alternatives. That's a fraudulent statement. There is nothing cleaner and more environmentally friendly. Not when you look at it honestly. Transportation takes energy. It takes construction to be a car, a vehicle of any kind. But they've been wanting you on your bikes for a long time. And so they'll pay you now. So let's tie that into what's going on with California. You think that you come to the end where your car is not going to be bought, you have one, they say, hey, listen, we'll give you $4,000 for your piece of junk. Can you be bribed? Oh, let's forget about the fact that when they put these laws in place, then the car companies jack their stuff up to cover that. So you don't get anything anyway. There's no incentive, actually. It's kind of like, looks good on paper, but no one puts it in practice. The subsidy, which was first produced last year, was recently increased after officials determined that more needed to be done to catch up to the bike-loving rivals like the Netherlands, Germany, and Denmark. I tell you, why is Netherlands always in the news? Oh, and then go look at the United States history right from the beginning. The French government said it wants 9% of the total of the country to switch to bicycles by 2024. Anyway, they went back on the subsidy they had to change because it wasn't enough bribe. And I'm thinking about, be careful, everybody in France out there, why don't you just dump? There's no euro that's any value for your freedom. They're putting you on an e-bike. Is there weather in France that they don't worry about it? You can ride your bike in the winter. You can be nice and toasty warm. How about cool in the summer? No, they're not thinking about that. No, they'll bribe you. France is going to bribe everybody. Apparently it's working to some little extent, but not enough. So they're going to up the ante here until they get everybody. France also used a Google AI tech to find tax evaders. So what I want to bring this up together, because of that little smart bike that they're going to give you, Usually they do this on tax credit stuff as well through the tax system. I told you this was the rising condition where, as we hear in this country, the United States, they've, the number is 87,000. I don't know the actual figures on all that. We went with the 87,000. Okay, the point was they're going to put a lot more energy in tax collecting. And they're not going to go after people that, like they don't ever, they're going to go after the same type of people that they go after, those that are defenseless against them. And they're going to be watching you with your devices and with your electronics. We've seen how France, another government, used Google AI tech to find tax evaders. I made the comment, without suggesting how, you better work out how you're not going to be liable to tax. There's a couple of statuses you better start looking for. You better do what I've been suggesting and learn to step aside of what they call someone who's liable and subject. They don't make it easy, and I'm not going to suggest anything because it takes the deep study and not moving before you've done a study to understand the situation about how this all works. Maybe I just give you maybe a little bit of a hint. You're going to look and find that the government can't go to a different jurisdiction that's been known to exist in the world before most governments that we know of today. There's a separate jurisdiction. I even criticize it. But it's because of what it hides. And that's the trick. Using AI technology developed by Google and Capgemini, French tax authorities have spotted 20,000 undeclared pools in private property, landing owners with bills amounting to approximately 10 million euro. Just out of the blue. In France, property modifications, including swimming pools, have to be declared to the tax office within 90 days of completion because property taxes are based on the value of the property. That's ad valorem, like the United States. So we thought America was different. How does France have the same system? Well, that's the system the government's adopted if you don't understand about your patent law. And you don't understand how the obligation of the state tied to Congress can't be changed, cannot infringe upon that. So this is how they're going to get people. They're all going to do it. These governments are doing it all the same. Well, how is it all globally the same, but the United States is supposed to be superior? How are you supposed to have property rights when the government can tax you out of your property? Now they use Google AI and this other company to ferret out people who improve their property. My mind just sits here. The digital age is really this big, giant, efficient recorder for plunder. Now, remember the thermostat folks? They couldn't opt out of changing their thermostat. They got hot, even though they needed to be cool. The company's, we won't do this again. Well, they did it once, and they lied before that you could opt out. But you go to Switzerland, you better watch out. And this is what I was telling you about how this control starts to come down. Swiss face up to 3 years in prison for violating heating rules. People in Switzerland who violate the country's new heating rules, which forbid setting the temperature above 19 centigrade or 66.2 degrees Fahrenheit in the colder months, will face up to 3 years in prison. Yes, really. Under the new rules, buildings that use gas heating systems are restricted to 19 degrees centigrade, while hot water can only be heated to 60 degrees centigrade, and radiant heaters are entirely banned. It will also be forbidden to heat swimming pools and saunas. Depending on the severity of the violation, the individual's economic situation, fines will range from 30 to 3,000 Swiss francs, that's about 30 to 3,000 bucks, while people can also be imprisoned for up to 3 years. I guess they'll keep your temperature at 66.2, I'll tell you. Utility companies and larger businesses would face even more severe penalties for breaking energy rationing rules. So, despite the brazenly authoritarian restrictions, economy minister Guy Parmelin asserted, quote, "We are not a police state," close quote, although we acknowledged police would perform spot checks to try to catch violators. In denial, but they're imposing sustainable development. They're imposing austerity. They're imposing what they call prosperity. It's not to you. It's to the system. I don't know how anybody can deny these things are going on when the news is full of what's going on. You're a criminal. You're a criminal because they created policies that caused the use of carbon to be criminalized. And everybody's okay with that. Well, a few farmers somewhere here and there. Maybe not. But I don't see much changing in that front too much either. And I want to point us back out. The Kobe fraud showed you how your local official, I don't care where you were in the world, could care less about the law. They could care less about people's rights. They could care less about keeping people prosperous, actually prosperous. They're planning to hurt people very badly. I'm going to be surprised to not hear that people are dying left and right this winter unless something gets relieved. As we hear, how in the name of God, shocked Europeans post astronomical energy bills as terrifying winter approaches. Now, I don't know about being so foretelling that I know there's a terrifying winter approaching, but I can say the signs are there that it's going to be pretty bad. And all this happened right in time, didn't it? Over the past week, shocked Europeans, mostly in the UK and Ireland, have been posting viral photos of shockingly high energy bills amid ongoing and worsening energy crisis. That was self-inflicted. Nobody had to blame Russia for anything in order to keep getting that gas from there, and everything would have been fine. They could have treated it like they do, normally in war, things that will affect your economy you don't mess with. Like Russia said a long time ago, business is different than war. Internationally, that's the rule. And most countries know that, except for the United States. Well, in Europe now, and Kyrgyzstan, and all these other places. Shocking. What got me shocked was that people didn't know these were coming, these bills. They're 10 times. They're showing at least 10 times higher. And we're not told. Now, I'm not sure if the United States is quite the same. They have a certain amount of, they have to go through the energy utility commissions to get their price hikes. So it comes a little bit slower. They're going to take the United States down a little bit different. You see what California's doing. But this is the shocking part to me was no one was really told, hey, you know, your bill's going to go 10 times, so watch out coming up. No, they were just let people use their stuff and then dinged them real hard. And this is the story back when we were talking, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where businesses are now, employees are going into their employers, and the employer's saying, I can't keep the doors open for you. There's no way. And this self-inflicted wound, you see, the Hegelian dialectic as most people understand it. They create their own problem so they can come in and give you the solution and then bring the synthesis to what they needed. The European plans emergency intervention in power market as all hell breaks loose. So they caused it. They blame somebody else and then they plunder the people and attack them. Your human capital and your energies are going to go to fund the government by the extraction of a medium from your hands, from your customers' hands, to their hands, to their leveraging system, which is, I've told you long before, leverage funding is how this whole sustainable development crowd works. We sued it in 2013. It's what caused the suit to be viable when the government appropriated funds to do things that were essentially treasonous, and that was agreed to in default. You're hearing about this Inflation Reduction Act. Didn't really talk too much about it. But that's a massive leverage funding to aid economical plunder. And they do it economically against you. It's designed through the creation of these digital gulags that are going to impose this digital slavery. That's what that Inflation Reduction Act. They look at the tagline, they didn't press it as an Inflation Reduction Act. It was actually the Climate Change Act. That's what is doing this thing in Europe. Your emergency intervention, they created the problem. I don't know why people just don't, I don't know why I don't hear ropes stretching here on this stuff. This is totally avoidable. It's still totally avoidable. You might have to make nice with Russia, but that wasn't their insult. I don't even know if I want to talk more about that part, about European plans. That was a setup for the takedown. They're taking everybody down. They're now going to move and change the standard by which the system was designed. The system wasn't even designed to do what the new plan does here in Europe. They're modified. They're transforming their use system. Like the United States, it was that the utilities are given great latitude to be, if you will, monopolistic in order that they keep the power flowing. That's why I've been shocked to watch the governments give over to the power companies any idea that they can do brownouts. That used to be that they couldn't do them. They had to do more investment. They had to keep up. This is the model that's changing. The needs of the society goes down relative to what nature protecting Gaia will be. And if you have to suffer, you're doing your part. Then good citizen, good resident. EU plans emergency intervention in energy markets. This is a complete transformation. The complaint is, wait a minute, we didn't make this system. This existing utility system wasn't designed to be function the way your plan works. And they're saying, it's okay, we're going to do it anyway. All because of the unbearable high costs here. And then they say, if Russia significantly limits flows. Well, Russia was about on tap to limit flows. That was a part of the plan. It's every year it goes on. No, these people are planning for that to happen. They can count on it. And then they just go ahead and blame the other thing, not themselves, for being the criminals, the plunderers, the organized criminals, under color of government. In this case, it's governance. In the EU, it's governance, not government. Europe is in serious trouble. This is probably a plan for the United States to take it down. The United States is a leader in promoting sustainable development. The EPA leads the world. The CDC leads the world in these standards that everybody pays attention to. The EPA itself is one of the pillars of sustainable development, a foreign imposition. Been talking about this all for years and years and years. I don't know what else to say. If people aren't going to step up, they're going to be suffering. They're going to probably be suffering anyway, but at least they're stepping up. I guess I can say it that way. Unless they don't. Unless we all don't. This is an economic attack. It's always been an economic attack. People are now feeling it. I was seeing the news. I hadn't heard too much about it. More and more people going hungry. More and more people going to the food shares, the food charity places, and I'm now hearing that they are. It is happening. No reason for it. The EU's crisis is global. Neocolonialism, hyper-financialization, and hyper-globalization come home to roost. I just don't even know. I'm just sitting here. I read these titles. I say, here, I've been talking about this. Someone's writing about it. It's not a question anymore. This is not just for the EU. What's interesting about what Russia's done is that they're trying to pair off part of the world. They're doing it. Everyone's going to go through some hardship. There's going to be some dust to settle. Charles Hugh Smith writes, the EU's crisis isn't limited to energy. It's a manifestation of a global breakdown of neocolonialism, financialization, and globalization. Well, you can have lots of multisyllabic words there. Syllabic, did I do that? Grammy? Syllabic. You know, big words, but this is a global plunder. There's some people that are planning this. And I'm not just talking Davos, so let's not get too focused. This is one thing I can't remember now if I focus, I found the tab. They focus everybody on one thing, but that's what they want you focused on. It's not really coming from there. The European Union has seen a culmination of centuries-long process of integration that would finally put an end to the ceaseless conflicts that had led to disastrous wars in the 20th century that had knocked Europe from a global preeminence. Wary of predations of the United States and rising Asian powers, European nations sought the economic and diplomatic strength of a confederation that would be great greater than the sum of its parts, a union that would restore Europe's rightful place as a global power. This worthy goal was undermined by the destructive dynamics of the past 40 years. He claims again neocolonialism, financialization, and globalization. Again, these are words. There's people behind these things that are doing it. The dynamics are unstable due to their internal contradictions. The internal contradictions is by plan to create the strife to allow the expert to come in and solve it. Bring the solution to what? Synthesis. I look at Charles Smith's writing. I like what he does, but sometimes I'm just wondering why he writes some of this stuff. There's a whole basic condition that's going on. It's been going on for decades and decades and decades. And we are in this, whatever names you want to put on it. This isn't about EU. It's like somebody I've told you. You look at one thing, it's really the reflection of the whole. But here we have, continuing just a couple more phrases here, the extractive model was at odds with the liberal worldview of the colonial powers, which had held self-rule and open markets as necessary to stable prosperity. The contradictions of the classical colonialism led to its collapse as colonies broke free and the colonial power were forced to navigate a more open global economy. Well, that's what the whole point was. They made this veneer above and controlled by money. Not money, but the funds. The how you trade. Again, the BIS is all powerful here. We talked about that. They want to control where your little pennies go so they can control you. The premier of that place said so, out of his mouth. So he says an extractive model. That's you being a human capital. You're producing. You're the domesticated animal. You keep buying into this stuff and you don't either make a separation, keep a distance, or put up some kind of a fight, however that might be. And I don't even know what that's going to look like anymore. The extractive model was from you, your energy and life. The Matrix is not a movie when I read those three words, the extractive model. I think one of the commenters in here quite a few weeks ago made a comment. I was talking about that, the people, making people in test tubes, there's not enough energy coming from them. It's not about that. It's about, even if they extract a little bit, it's about keeping their system and keeping you out of it. Moving over here. The contradictions of classical colonialism led to its collapse. Okay. But there was another plan that caused that. Again, the strife. They can collapse. You say it collapsed, but if there's a plan to collapse it, that's not a problem for those in the control. Beneath the glossy vibe of strength through unity, the EU institutionalized a neocolonial model in which the EU members are more equal than some EU members are more equal than others and divide that was starkly revealed in the debt crisis of 2011 to 2012. And then I want to add, this is the COVID fraud showed it really isn't. It's all equal because that was an economic attack universally brought. So I like to see what he's writing here and read it. Sounds really good, but there's a gameplay going on that keeps people off of the points. And then they don't know what to really go after and attack. I think Putin has a better idea, actually. I'm not saying I agree, and I'm not saying I like it, because we're suffering now from it. But that was also looking into what the United States, the system of the United States had done in plunder around the world in setting these systems up. The World Bank. Build the World Bank toolbox, toolboxes. They have all kinds of things, ways to destroy your country. The IMF, Lagrange, what he's saying, Lagarde, I mean, saying, oh, this is a, these juicers, these sticker juices are going to be the economy. That really wasn't the total right, but that she was making a point. If you expand the point on what all these conditional smart things are, that's what they're talking about. And they get to the day when one day you can't control your thermostat because you're a rewards customer. You go to jail because you want to go 67 degrees instead of 62.6. they don't have to have a cop. They've got a smart device that's looking at it, whether it's accurate or not, and you'll pay. And then it's like dealing with any, like DMV, and you're going to be standing in line to try and show your innocence and have no way to prove it. The EU's crisis is the crisis of the world, is the plan that's been implemented across the world. So he's astute to pick it out, but this is not even a question. As I said before, myself, the mirror, the carnival mirror of the Europe and Middle East is a reflection on what's going on in the United States. I said when the thing went down in Ukraine and Russia, everything that happened would be like spitting into a hurricane. We would suffer. I don't think I've been wrong. And we're not done yet. All of the West is not done yet. It's not because of Russia. Despite stories, Putin has pushed Europe into inflationary depression and currency collapse. Russia didn't do anything. But this is people that are psychopaths. These are people that are manipulative. These are people that are delusional. They do not think anything about you. They make stuff up and blame you for it. And I told you this is about, it's not about you being innocent. You get a cop on the other side of a data chain and he decides or she decides that you've done wrong, you're going to be engaged. So let's blame Putin. World U.S. markets closed yesterday for Labor Day. This is a week old or so. All the action was in Europe, and given that Nord Stream 1 has been shuttered and European Commission had floated war economy style regulations, remember they were talking, I said, anytime you have rationing, you're in war. The European did that to itself. They're in war against their people. They blame Russia. European Commission had floated war economy style regulations, and Russia then made clear that unless the sanctions are dropped, no gas will ever flow through Nord Stream 1 again. It was no wonder that Euro stocks were down and EUR dipped below 0.99 for the first time in 20 years as the dollar wrecking ball momentum continued. There's your veneer over the top of every nation. The dollar wrecking ball. The system that was put in place that the BIS looks over, that now wants to go to digital currency so they can look at every penny you do, everything you spend, your carbon footprint, and everything else they want to do, as they monetize it, and they make the money. They make the profit that is spendable in the world. In fact, when they spend it, it's sovereign immunity. You want to know who the sovereigns in the country are? Go to the BIS and look around. Look at what they got. In fact, it's given me an idea. Maybe that's what I'm going to set up. Why not? Maybe we all should. Maybe we should take example. Understand some international law. Start recognizing certain proper things. So, the stock markets closed here and in the States of the day. On that day, Europe finds a problem. And they blame Russia on something that Europe did, that the dollar didn't go to sleep that day, did it? No. This is the ongoing plunder of a veneer of control, you call it the banksters. This is even way beyond all that. And they're bringing us into a digital control structure that I think can be considered digital gulags. Causing digital slavery, what they call austerity. They'll say it's prosperity, but they're talking about it what it is to them. It's an economic slavery against you. It's economical for them to impose. That's economy. Stupid. STOOPID. Some of you are sensitive. This is what's coming down right now. It's not just the Europe is the crisis of the world, it's that there's a control structure above that that's actually pulling all the punches. And they're utilizing these techniques that we see in order to get it to go. And we can kind of now see, I hope, the idea of what they use. The government uses fear, intimidation, and dread. And that's really in your mind. That's what's the interesting thing I see here. That fear, intimidation, and dread is all in your mind. There, obviously, there was nothing to be afraid of. There was nothing, no infectious agent. And yet the whole world got infected with the idea there might be. Some of those didn't, but most did, and they drove the system. Now, despite Russia being the fall guy here, and let's give it to the system and show you how this starts to work, when you hit rubber meets the road, when everybody realizes, oh, you're all carbon-based life, you can't take it away and you can't tax it because it's natural. It didn't come from government. When we finally come around to that one, you might start to see something here. Even though Russia's being blamed, the United States pops up and says it would be a serious problem to call Russia a state terror sponsor. And this is a very interesting exposure, I guess, from the State Department. For all the saber-rattling and all the blame they put on Russia, Putin, they dare not call Russia a state terror sponsor. The State Department is quietly pushing back on congressional efforts to brand Russia a state sponsor of terror. New reports suggest a week after Russian foreign minister spokesman underscored that such a designation would prompt, quote, equal reaction by Moscow. The State Department has serious problems with the Senate's recent resolution demanding Russia be placed on the terrorism blacklist and is privately cautioning congressional members against the measure, Politico detailed Thursday. The outlet reported that the firm's fear stems from concerns that the move could jeopardize a fragile agreement which has allowed merchants to begin shipping grain struck between Ukrainian mines in the Black Sea in weeks. That is a weak place to go, because when they do that, it affects everything, not just this one group. And you see again the psychopaths in the government, in the Senate, supposed to represent your states, are blaming a country without any concept of what calling that country a state sponsor of terror would do. Again, they're willing to do it. They're willing to cut their nose to spite their face, and the only people that are going to be harmed is you. Russia didn't say they will equally react if they're going to be taken down by it. This is some very high-level stupidity going on here in the government. But it's now possible that it goes on. All you have to look is the EU crisis. And then understand, if we got money going on the top, and I say man loosely, control. You control nations by what you claim you're giving them on paper and the things that you extend to them to be part of the monetary system of the world, to be part of the commerce system of the world. That is the controlling agent. That affects your lives when your leaders capitulate, like we were talking in Sri Lanka. And they did, didn't they? Absolutely the way I said they would. So the stupidity that's going on in the Senate of all places is tried to be tamped down because we don't want to be too stupid about international law where the rubber meets the road. And we see all the same stupid players in the government. How these people are still in government, I just don't get it. But I do get it because I see, again, I said, the last couple of years in this fraudulent infectious agent that infected the idea of it infecting the world showed us a ton of weakness in the people. It was as if it gave stupidity a reason to be. It gave license to lawlessness. And I don't see how we're moving down the road and getting better if we're not going to step up and protect ourselves. I just don't have another answer in me. Again, I think about that. There's not many people talking about it either. There's just not a, oh, we'll give it big old names and we'll talk about that it's going on, but no one starts to work out how this is going to be circumvented so that we don't get affected. So that, as I say, we aren't standing on the train track when it comes by on schedule. Now, the crisis is being used as are set up and planned. As I've told you, though, those are set up from inside your governments long before they ever got there. As I pointed out, we looked in one state, it was in Tennessee, in the David Tullis suit, and I tracked down in the rules, not the law, but the rules that had been promulgated after the law that violated the law, the legislature's will and mandate for the executive to do that. And that was to bring in a foreign suggestion. They called them experts and given power. There's no delegation of authority to do that. But I know to go look for that because that's what I started to see back in 2010 or so before the lawsuit and this leverage funding thing. They give license to do things to use the appropriated money to go do things that normally are not within the authority's ability to do so under the color of doing something beneficial. And you see this a lot in the environmental sector. Again, if you go to the World Bank and you find their toolkits, you'll see how this technique works. But what gets there before you and what's happened across this country, in a way it's nice because then you start having states that have consistent laws. In another way, you start to see how those consistent laws can cause trouble. And they bring consistency to those that brought what they call model laws into being. So that there is that consistency. What they may fail to do, and each state can look at those model law and make it special, but what they fail to do is understand what the model law was actually going to do. And I was sent a link here a bit ago and want to show you. When I tell you that there's stuff in the system, there's laws in the system, and what I identified was the law school students were writing the laws and sending them to the legislature, bits and pieces of things that they had worked out that they needed to have done, give them to a legislature, a legislator picks it up and then submits it in, and they do the law becomes a bill thing, the little cartoon, they do that. It makes it all look official. And what this stuff is, these are the Trojan horses of destruction. They come in bits and pieces, and they're assembled on the other side when bits and pieces, the proper amounts of bits and pieces get put together. And that's how we caught the one. Looking at the one bills that we were looking at in 2010 or so, 2011, and I said, you know, here, look at all these pieces are gone in that we were responding to everything to say, you can't do it like this. This is against the law. And I said, you know, we come right to the end. It's only got a couple of weeks left, and they haven't funded any of this. We're looking for a funding bill. And 2 days before the end of that session, the funding bill popped up, which we answered immediately and said, you can't do this. But they did. And then we sued them because they did. But it was a leverage funding. As soon as they appropriated government money to do these things that were essentially usurpations of United States law, like a state law, essentially, and federal, United States obligations in property and production, we were able to move. It was on the money. But these model laws are put in by people who are trained to do so, and they are trained to do certain things. And the link that was sent to me, the title of this, Model Laws for Deep Decarbonization in the United States. I haven't had a chance to go through this. When you go read through it, you just realize, for me, it's just like watching the organization that is one of the groups of lawyers, attorneys, bar members that subvert this place with the outcome to decarbonize you and your carbon. They are too, but see, they're disconnected. They're psychopaths. So you have, when I say that there's model laws that precede you, there's laws that are there before we get to the crisis. These are the guys, the gals that put this together. And it comes through so many different venues, the university system as well. And everybody picks it up and it becomes normal thought to everybody. But it has the color of law. And it's adopted by those inside that are receptive to it as well. So this is the other part of the crisis. EU's crisis is everybody's crisis because these folks are doing this and have been doing it for decades upon decades. It isn't just about climate change. That just seems to be the latest iteration of destruction, the latest, most concise if you will, fulfillment of the technocrat. Even the word sounds official, technocrat. But model laws of deep, dark decarbonization. Who comes up with this stuff? There's some kind of a movie they got the idea. You got carbonized and we're going to put you in prison, decarbonize you, and we're going to decarbonize everybody, make freedom for everybody. No, these people are criminals. They're utilizing the system. They utilize the status. They utilize the special guild in order to advance things in systems that most people have no clue about. And I can't even say I know most about it. Yeah, I saw how a bill becomes a law. Now, I know a little bit more. But no, these people are working 24/7, all kinds of places, focused on completing a mission. And when you see a deep decarbonization of the United States, you should have a shiver go down your spine. They're talking about you. They're coming about you. They're going to make laws that put you in prison if you don't like 66.2 degrees. If you don't like to be locked out by some companies, oh, we don't ever want to do this again. The plunder is inside the system already in model laws. It's just cookie cutter. They go from one state to the next. What did I talk to you about? I told you that about how they were bringing down the legalization of marijuana. I said, don't ever legalize that. Just stop making it a crime. Don't make it an issue. No, they have to legalize it, because if they legalize it, they get to control it. They get to regulate it. What did I tell you about the digital currency? Regulation. How did I learn that? Studying about miners. Miners would go and do what they did. The government went to war with them. The government finally said, well, why don't we just make friends, if you will? Then we won't fight with them no more. We'll give them something, but at least we'll regulate them. We'll bring them into tow if they agree. And they did. In a way, it was okay. It was fine. Up until the government reneged here in the last couple decades about getting a grant to get you the land, that you get the money, that if you stick around and you get the gold, then that's what the government wants is the gold, not because it's the gold necessary, but it creates the production for things of commerce eventually. It could be any metal, it could be any productive, it could be food. And you see they're integrated in subsidizing food. That means it's a plan when it fails. When you go and can't get it, it means it's a plan that it's failing. But decarbonization is absolutely the tip of the spear for sustainable development. Absolutely climate change. And there's people making laws in order for the future to be what they want. Just like they're telling us. When you can't opt out, do you have property rights in something? Are you in control? That's another thing about mining. You get exclusive possession. That's control. You don't have control, you don't have possession. It's not exclusive. You can look like you're holding something, but you don't actually have the control. But when the government grants that to you, they cannot supposed to touch it. So when you get bribed off and become a rewards customer, haven't you consented? And didn't you get a consideration for it? And consideration should be looked up by lots of people. That's very, very interesting, that word. Very, very interesting how vast that word really is relative to contracts. So the model laws set you up for a plunder. They set you up for all kinds of controls. People don't understand the system, and I understand it's too vast, it seems, anymore. And I've done it for quite a few years, and it's just tiring. And so part of it's because there's only a few of us, I can tell you that. And then you have these organized groups like this that come in and advocate these positions. They sell the idea to a legislator who has no clue. That's one of the failures of our system. The deep decarbonization of the United States is the implementation of everything that you are being told right now is transforming a political climate change. Political climate is being changed by these model laws. They're laws. They're inside the state. They've never been challenged. They likely won't be challenged. And they'll be facing another bar member that will decide on whether they're challengeable. These model laws are made by attorneys. I don't know how much clearer this link is to explain how deep the problem is against the people. When it makes it look like it's a law, and we don't have a clue of how to get at it, it stays that way. This is somewhat of another failure of our system. They claim, you had the right of a referendum. You have the right of initiative. But it's when you look at the system of it, the right of model laws making and adoption of those model laws by groups of people that you don't even know and are groups of a foreign entity that have more influence because they're experts should terrify people. We should have ended this a long time ago. This is a very subtle set of plunder. It's called under color of authority, color of law. And what it is the transformation of an independent system. And we don't even have a clue about it. And then within that, there are other ways that the system plunders. Again, we're just like these human carbon units that they can extract. Remember, extractive processes go on. They extract milk from a cow. They extract this energy from you. And then they penalize you by it. What did I tell you about your civil rights? You get to pay exactions or extortions of every kind. That's your civil rights. Everyone will pay. And no non-governmental organization can remove that. Go read 42 U.S.C. 1981. So these are exactions that are placed on us and by our permission. So the plunder goes on and plunder goes everywhere. I've got this link here, kind of interesting, in the forfeiture side. So they've gone into that. They make the item itself to be the plunderer, the problem, the crime, and they sue the thing. It's called the forfeiture is the item is sued, and apparently this is a warning for y'all. And again, when an official says you've done wrong, presumptively you've done wrong, and the government has the power by its code in order to steal your money. If you are dealing with the U.S. Postal Inspector Service, get this link and see how many people are having their money stolen under the claim that it is tied to some illicit purpose. Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And you're either going to walk away because it's too expensive to get that money back, or you're going to fight it and be facing likely a loss, or you're really not too sharp to figure out, you better not send it to the postal office because they're catching all this money, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. Amazing. So the Postal Service is not our friend either. The government is not our friend. As I said, if you'd stop making marijuana illegal, then there's not going to be a violation to Section 881 that they can do this to you. So they purposely kept control. They purposely keep it at the federal level on a list. So, U.S. Postal Inspection, if you're sending money through the postal office, maybe you shouldn't. And I've got you a link here to the law relative to the citation on most of the forfeitures, the 21 U.S.C. Code 881 forfeitures. Roll down to all monies. I'd like to know where those are. All monies, negotiable instruments and securities, or other things of value furnished or intended to be furnished by any person in exchange for a controlled substance on a listed chemical. In violation of this subchapter, all proceeds traceable to such exchange and all monies, negotiable instruments and securities, used or intended to be used to facilitate any violation of this subchapter. If you look at the beginning of that, the United States is given all property and you have no rights in that. The following shall be subject to the forfeiture of the United States and no property right shall exist in them. There's no question here about there's a mistake. No, it just happens. And this is what's going on in the digital world. It's just going to happen to you. The government plunder just increases. The AI in France is used to go find tax evaders. What do you think is going to happen in the United States? I've been telling everybody about this that will listen. You better not be of the taxable status. You better figure out how to get that, and you better look right when you do it. So everybody's going to get their piece. You got the public sector, and you go through the post office and you hand it to them. They just take it. They'll claim, I'm sure some of those people may have been doing something. I thought we had a presumption of innocence, though. Well, that doesn't seem to work there. I didn't see a connection. When I read the list, I didn't see a connection to exactly what the money was tied to by probable cause warrant. I didn't see any listing for that, just the statute. So we got that to the public side plunder. We have that. You get the digital world. You get into doing things. You got the private sector. Hackers are breaking into accounts and emptying Cash App accounts. So, again, public service notice. If you're dealing with these Cash Apps, how about if you don't? Hackers are breaking into unsuspecting victims' Cash App accounts, a massively popular payment app, and stealing hundreds of dollars, according to victims and motherboard spoke to. In one person's case, they said Cash App, that's the name of a Cash App, has not reimbursed them for stolen funds. It's scary, Liz Shelby says. Enough. Getting into these systems, you're liable to be controlled. You're liable to be plundered. I don't know what else to say. I wish it was different. And until we start setting a hard, fast line and not getting into it, denying it where we don't need to, and make sure that we don't need to about everywhere, then if we don't, that this is coming down upon you. There's going to be vultures everywhere, public or private. It won't matter. So the government plunders on. There's some kind of a wave of that going on. The government is given the presumption of right and the presumption to say you're doing wrong. And this is probably the scariest thing I've been watching going into this digital technocratic world. The bureaucrat has the power of persuasion, and it holds until you throw it off. You have no right in the property. If your existence becomes a forfeiture, you have no right in that. The government does. Now the burden's on you. And they got you've been testifying against yourself in your phone, in all your phone stuff. And your accounts, and the social accounts, and all that other digital stuff. The government's going to get theirs. The government's going to get theirs by when they say. And this is what makes this so dangerous, and people want to say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. How do you know that when you don't have the say? Court says United States citizens now need a permit to publish video taken at a national park. Now this, I've read this statute. It's only for commercial purposes. This is the problem about this case. The National Park Service just decided what they were doing, what the filmer was doing, was a commercial endeavor. What this extends to is those of you who go on vacation and put your video on YouTube and get monetized for it. You owe the government. The Park Service comes right in and says that was for commercial purposes. No more innocence in the world, right? Oh, we're just making a video for their vacation. We put it on YouTube. I just want to show the world, but Google monetized it, so you get stuck with a fine and a ticket and a fine, and you're not going to get what you thought you had free. The United States Court of Appeals, District of Columbia Circuit Court ruling in the Price versus Garland case, yeah, that same guy, the Attorney General, has been criticized for creating what looks like a confusing precedent involving First Amendment rights implications. The rights of citizens to freely create and publish video material taken in United States national parks. Well, actually, it's not, as long as you don't stick it on and monetize it. Then you can. I don't know where you put it anywhere on the social net, actually, that some company's not monetizing something about it. This link, you can get the ruling, you can read it. I mean, I'm just sitting here reading and looking at this stuff. How are we to this point? I guess being a photographer and a videographer, it's like, wow. I mean, where are you supposed to speak about your stuff? Why aren't you supposed to be able to work, make a livelihood from your stuff that they call it commercial? What happened to livelihood, non-commercial? What happened to production that's not commercial? Is what I start seeing. Then you start finding out that the United States government's a commercial entity. As I told you, it started through the Treaty of Peace to be a commerce entity. That's why Congress has these exclusive jurisdiction over it. And people don't quite pick up on this little detail. And then everything becomes commerce. Why your human capital becomes, that's a commerce statement. The internet is a commerce vehicle. So this whole thing boils down to that I didn't like about it, because we have to fight it all the time, is it's given to the agency to make that decision. And now you have to go fight it, or you just pay, or whatever you're going to have to do to deal with it. You're going to have to go get some bar member to turn over to show how you didn't. But they already got the goods on you, because you just didn't know. The power of a bureaucrat is very difficult to deal with. The power, what's interesting is that in recent people I've helped, they deny that they don't have jurisdiction, and they deny they're committing fraud when they don't have jurisdiction and they're committing fraud. They kick the can to somebody else. So those of you who say you don't do anything wrong, when a bureaucrat says you're doing wrong, you're involved. And they have the presumption of right, even though they actually don't have jurisdiction at some level. This case, not so much. You're in a park, you take pictures. If you're going to find that, if someone finds you made money with that, that was supposed to get a permit, you can get a ticket. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that's what the rule says. That's what that law says. So you got to be very careful on how you proceed in the world, because the government's looking to take its plunder. Every place it can. You think, oh, we're just going to let back a little bit. No, as soon as this guy played this video in a restaurant, they hit it. How they knew about that, I don't know. But anyway, the eyes are everywhere, I guess. So the plunder gets taken by the government. The presumption is they're right, and you're going to be it's going to be very difficult in order to throw that off. So you attach that to the private side in the public-private partnership. That private company gets this power, as you heard, like PG&E in California, being able to do whatever they decide. But we'll never do that, because this has all been an impossibility, and then, they cut off your thermostats. That's the world we're walking into. This is the problem of the technocrat world, the governance world. Government gives up, delegates its authority, which it really can't, but there's no judge to say it can't, because they're all agreeing with the decarbonization. So while they're getting all this plunder, the U.S. Post Office, I guess, funds itself through all this money that it forfeits from everybody. And the National Park Service is going to get now their ticket money or their fees for you videoing. I mean, at some point, I'm just wondering why they just don't charge you a fee right off the bat so that there's no question. I mean, at least you would be protected when you walked in. And then on the other end, when you didn't, then you can have them refund your money. Maybe that would be a better and safer thing for you to do. Just pay for the permit, then don't use it. Tell them, take it back. They won't do that. But the point is that you're walking into a world that looks to its vultures. So the government gets all this funds. And so I found this interesting as well. Why this is now coming out is also found interesting. Why this ever happened, I never understood. Apparently they're getting so much money from the U.S. Postal Service plundering the forfeitures. They can now, the White House memo calls for the end of paywalls on publicly funded research. I guess it's being paid for some reason, by somehow. Why this was ever a thing, I don't even understand, but the White House has released a new public access guidelines requiring now, good, publicly funded research to be available for free immediately after it is published. Currently, publicly funded research can be put behind journals' paywalls for 12 months. Before it is available for free. Now, for me, that's a great sign. Why was it ever put there first? They gave advantage to people. Made plunder. Should have never happened. A memo on the new public access guidelines was released by the new Office of Science and Technology Policy. It states that individual agencies will have to draft their policies based on the guidelines within a year, but larger agencies have 180 days. The updated guidelines are expected to take effect by the end of tomorrow? Next week? The end of the year? Christmas? No. 2025. More plunder, more time, delay. Should have never happened in the first place. So this is, again, we're being the human capital. We're being put against. We have to wait. The other side of this coin was when I looked at all the fraud, the infectious agent fraud that was going on. I don't know if we wanted to see some of those studies. They were all bribed studies. They were all like proving climate change. They're all fraud. They're studies of studies. They're somewhat difficult to go through sometimes. So there's another side to this whole. Oh, they're making them free, but what are they making free now? Eventually, by 2025. Why 2025? What is this thing about the government that if it's public, that it can wait? What's the point? Just why not just lift the restriction? Because there's something else. There's a couple of years of premium going on. There was a deal cut, and that gets us around the fact that we're going to go for two more years. Maybe it wasn't such a big deal. Maybe we could have always charged. No, they should have never charged on this. Wikimedia Foundation launches legal challenge against NSA's mass surveillance. The Wikimedia Foundation, the nonprofit behind Wikipedia, has petitioned the United States Supreme Court to review a legal challenge in NSA's mass surveillance of communications of United States citizens with people overseas. In the litigation, Wikimedia is being represented by the Knight First Amendment Institute, the American Civil Liberties Union, who hasn't helped anybody. The surveillance, dubbed upstream surveillance, allows the NSA to intercept internet messages, private emails, and web communications. Can I read that again? Allows the NSA to intercept internet messages, private emails, and web communications. Now, we've already known this, but where did the government get this kind of power if you thought you lived in a free country? The government gets theirs, the bureaucrat has to say. And until people start figuring this out, I don't know what to think how we're going to do it as a society. There's no pressure being put on this nonsense that's been allowed by the courts as well. And the courts, we talk about, the sustainable developments, the courts promote it, the Bar Association promotes it. That's not the only vulnerability the society has. That just happens to be the easiest one, the low-hanging fruit for me. The things that people, you can look in the world right now, it seems to be the thing that speaks out for everybody can understand if you look a little bit. There's so many vulnerabilities that we have inside this system, it's really kind of a pathetic thing now. And I think a lot of people that have any sense in their head sense that. But we have a problem. We don't know what to do about it, actually. And what I offer is to try and keep yourself at a distance from it, if possible. And when you get yourself in it, assess your position, move, make a record that allows you to move to try and keep some distance. So this is all coming out of that Section 702 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the FISA. We find it's a rubber stamp court that sets all this stuff up. So it's finally, 23 years after it got started, finally someone's starting to challenge it. The problem is, this is on weak ground. And that's the problem with the whole thing. I said the ACLU hasn't helped anything. This is up against the toughest stuff you can go against, which is the state secrets. And so I don't know if I'm going to expect much of this, but here is someone trying, I guess. Again, remember, you can make court cases to test the law and to make precedent so that it works against everybody if you do it right. And I've watched as the system certainly doesn't want precedent to work in favor where they can convolute it. And that's a couple of cases I've watched. And why it's also important, why I keep telling you, look at the black and white, stay that, because that's your bright line. They can't fudge that part. They can make it look like they can fudge that part, but they actually can't. And so if you get too wordy and get too outside of the scope of what you actually need to talk about, you give them advantage because you give them the things, lots of different things to bring up. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult to keep our tongue, if you will, but that's what we have to start to learn to do. I talk a lot here trying to explain things, but over the years, I've been learning really get your sentences tight. Talk specifically on certain things and be consistent in that. Go to the very first duty. Make sure that's been done. And when it doesn't, don't move from there. Don't start talking about anything else but the failure of that duty. Well, as long as you have the consequence. See, you got to have the consequence. So if someone's trying to stop this nonsense, what you notice, again, they're reminding us, intercepts internet messages and private emails and web communications. They're wired for sound. Absolutely wired for sound. And what isn't global that's connected to the internet is an interesting problem in my mind that they don't have access everywhere. Collin College administrators are personally liable for firing professor over social media posts. Judge rules. This is interesting. This now starts to show there is a little bit of a limit. A federal judge ruled that the administrators of Collin College who fired Professor Suzanne Jones for views she expressed on her personal social media can be held personally and financially responsible. The judge ruled the termination was, quote, clearly unconstitutional, close quote, because the administrators admitted they fired Jones, quote, for using her private social media account to inform the public about a matter of public concern. And I want you to take a bright highlight of that paragraph. First, that the administrators admitted means in the future, you'll have to extract from those that are making the claim that this is the same thing. They admit they fired her for using her private social media account to inform the public about a matter of public concern, which means that you have to be stating things for matters of public concern. That's why I talked to you a long time ago when that law came out, something about, I can't remember now, I put it on my blogcaster or something somewhere, and I can't remember, I paraphrased what it is, that we're working to stamp out, you know, this corruption. That's what we're here for. We're doing what the law says we're supposed to do. Here, if you speak in the matter of public concern, that's going to be a clearly unconstitutional thing to be penalized or retaliated against for. So this is how we have to start speaking. Now, I don't know that it's going to work in everywhere, and I don't know that what the facts of this case are, and I don't know how you're going to get an administrator to admit that this now that they see that they can't. But if you start presenting their stuff as or be able to show that it would be a matter of public concern, you're going to be able to protect yourself better. In other words, it's what I've been telling you. You develop and frame your position in a way that's supportable in the black and white that cannot be denied to you. You have to do this. Otherwise, a bureaucrat can say you didn't. Otherwise, you then still get involved to the point where you put your condition at the mercy of a judge. So understand, like, that paragraph is pretty powerful. There's a bunch of things going on in that paragraph. There's a lot of things that have to go on. And there's a lot of things that you have to do as you're doing them, not think after the fact, when you do them, so that you can use this. Use the fact that you're doing things in matters of public concern. Isn't that interesting that if you don't do it in that regard, it's not protected? You think you live in a free society? Anyway, so here's a professor who sued that she have a right to her say in matters of public concern. And what was that? The public college located in Texas fired Jones in January 2021 for criticizing the school's COVID response, supporting a non-bargaining union and signing an open letter calling for Confederate memorials to be removed. Isn't that interesting? The COVID response sits there. What about all the people you know that were doing COVID responses in social media that got wiped out, got whacked? All these actions are protected by the First Amendment according to the Foundation of Individual Rights and Education called FIRE. The organization representing her. So maybe if you have this need, contact that organization. Maybe they can help you if you can't or don't understand how to maybe move things forward. I guess the point is until people start moving things forward, the presumption is held in the government, the presumption is held inside the universities, the presumption of right is held in the bureaucrat, the presumption of right is held in a business that acts this way until they're overthrown. I've never seen anything in my life like it. This is not a free society. It's not a presumption of innocence. This is a presumption of tyranny. There's no basis for it. There's the color of an authority. And the only thing I know to balance that out is to go after the black and white that shows they either had the right to do it that way or they didn't. Because they're not going to listen to you at all. British judge rules dissident can sue Saudi Arabia for Pegasus hacking. And I think that's the Israeli product. The British judge has ruled that a case against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia brought by a dissident satirist who was targeted with the spyware can proceed, a decision that has been hailed as a precedent setting and one that could allow other hacking victims in Britain to sue foreign governments who order such attacks. So this is a pretty big deal. This is going back again to your right to speak, the right for it to speak in things of public concern. Problem is you're going against the government itself, but it's a foreign government that went after that government to say, yeah, you're not supposed to do it that way. So I'd like to know why the FBI is using Pegasus in the United States. If we're the beacon of freedom, the beacon of all these things, the right of free speech and this and that, why are the only the things of public concern valid and unconstitutionally infringed and other things aren't? Why does the FBI use Pegasus when Saudi Arabia couldn't? Why is that being decided not in the United States but in Britain? I guess I'll just move on. Vietnam demands big tech localize data storage and offices. Here's another country. I named a few before. Another country that's going to localize their information. There has to be a domestic company that holds the data. In other words, the countries are not allowing these corporations to go global. They're going to want some control. And the point about that and the data, they have control of that data. In other words, you're not going to be anonymous. As the SpaceX satellite link of all the world gets connected up and all these countries start hooking up to that service. Vietnam's Ministry of Information and Communications updated its cybersecurity laws this week. Its cybersecurity laws this week to mandate big tech and telecom companies store user data locally and control that data with local entities. The data affected goes beyond the basic name, email, credit card, phone number, and IP address and extends into social elements, including groups of which users are members or friends with whom they digitally interact. Enough said on the digital gulag setup that you are becoming a digital slave to, given that you continue, and this is in a country I'm certain that may not look so nicely on people that didn't like the government, like the United States doesn't. Actually, I think it was the Vietnam War. Before that got started, there was a guy that was conducive to the United States, and they ignored him until we had the war. That's another plan by the United States to take control. And then you saw what happened to it, messed up. Kind of like the French doing stuff, like in Mali. So the free speech thing, the governments don't want free speech. Another country's coming to take the data. I told you about digital stuff. They're going to control it. They're going to regulate it. They're going to localize it like they're saying here. They domesticate it so they can control it. And if you think you're getting outside of that world to do things, again, the Matrix is not a movie. You're going to be living in the sewers and you're going to hope the Centurion doesn't find you. And you better have that EMP device in order if they do. Now, I don't know anybody that has that, so mark on the beast at protonmail.com to let me know where one is. I've got to figure out other ways until then. As Oracle surveillance machine faces privacy class action. Excuse me, so this is the case that's on weak grounds, not the other one, I'm sorry. The Oracle surveillance machine. Oracle was doing stuff to globally in order to collect the data, but they were doing it in gray areas that wasn't any lockdown or any lock guidance for a bureaucrat. And so this is going to be a tough sell, but enterprise giant Oracle is facing a fresh privacy class action claim in the United States. The suit was filed Friday. The 66-page complaint, there's a link in the Northern District of California alleges the tech giant's worldwide surveillance machine has amassed detailed dossiers on some 5 billion people, accusing the company and its ad tech and advertising subsidiaries of violating the privacy of majority of the people of Earth. So you can come and read more of this if you're interested in this, that these companies, remember I told you the public-private partnership, then you have these corporations behind the scenes, they don't advertise what they do. It takes a lawsuit to be able to pull it out. Whether this wins or not is the point that you get the chance to pull out and show Oracle is a big, giant corporate multinational company. Having dossiers on 5 billion people in a data where data is valuable, where big data is valuable, is very lucrative. It's been going on all the time. Somebody finally comes out to try and stop, highlight a problem. I don't know how far they're going to get, but we're going to have to see, because as they say here, it remains to be seen whether this patchwork approach of utilizing different acts of Congress to attack this is that approach is a bit tricky in a legal to a tricky legal environment, and the question is whether or not they can prevail. This is just, in my mind, just getting the information out. These big corporations already kind of have us by the throat. 5 billion dossiers on 5 billion people. If you're tied into the system, you're likely in one of their databases. And they're going to sell to the highest bidder, if you will. They will just put it in the marketplace. And they just keep using it over and over and over again. Pakistani government threatens to block digital IDs to shut down access to bank accounts. So here you are, the digital gulag, and then you're the slave to it. And then they said, well, you're not going to have your privileges today. They just shut you off. So Pakistan's showing us that. Pakistani government threatens to block digital IDs to shut down access to bank accounts, and you don't do anything without your digital ID. Amid continuing blackouts and great political unrest, the Pakistani government has threatened protesters with having their digital IDs blocked so that they can't access their bank accounts. So keep having digital bank accounts. See, keep getting into the digital realm. Keep utilizing it. And this is what's going to happen. They can't actually do that with cash. And then a lot of people that are using it. They can't do it if you say, I don't have a phone. No, I can't get that account. No, I'm too stupid. My thumbs are too big. Whatever. I mean, start making a list of explanations. How about just leave me alone? I'm not interested. No, I don't consent. I don't want to be one of your rewards customers. I don't opt in. I don't even opt. I'm not even there. So the writing's on the wall about all this. And if you think being shut out of your stuff is only to Pakistan and something you might think is a third world country trying to make something of itself, EBT goes down nationwide, people furious as welfare cards stop working. A major outage in the United States Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, is reportedly affecting Americans across the country. So what did people do? They got furious. So I'm looking at that saying, okay, you get in your digital world and something goes snafu, even if the government didn't intend it. No, this is an emergency. We have to do something. People go furious. What are you going to do? It causes chaos. What happens is you find out you can't do what you're going to do. Let's say you get, like in this case, is a story, load up your basket full of groceries. You show up at the counter, and then there's no card for your food. And then you say, oh, well, that's the welfare. That's the ghetto people. No, this is your digital coin, digital social future. So keep pointing the finger at the poor and the people who need help and lose your charity while you don't think it's happening to you, and tomorrow you're them. And you don't have a say. Why? Because some bureaucrat had something to say, or some IT dude unplugged a machine. More likely, your carbon footprint got a little too big for your shoe. And they're going to keep you from moving around. No, you can't move about the country. No, we can't afford to give you more heat in your place. Put on more clothes. Oh, you can't go down on your scooter to get the new sweater that you can't afford anyway? Well, that's not our problem. You're a rewards customer. So EBT card goes down. Just an insight. People go furious. They have no alternative. I guess that was the thing that struck me. People aren't hurting. They're increasingly hurting. The middle class is being destroyed. More and more people are finding trouble in the world of economically keeping up. More and more homeless. And then that little tangible thing that you have, the last little bit, that there has just a glitch, you know, honest glitch. You don't get your food. You don't get anything. You don't even know when it's coming back. So for the system, control of you is very economical. Just get you to buy into their card, and that's what you have to do. Buy into your social credit. Buy into the fact you haven't have an account. What about when you can't afford your phone anymore, or you can't afford that data plan? What happened all then? Well, you just become one of those that they don't care about. They don't need your carbonization anyway. You didn't behave correctly. No, next story, next tab. Rockefeller Foundation wants behavioral scientists to come up with a more convincing COVID sticker juice narrative. Do we need more to say from that title? Behavior is about this whole thing. Again, this sticker juice thing, this fraudulent infectious agent was a tool. And yet another sign of the COVID fraud sticker juice agenda of globalist institutions did not do quite as well as they had originally hoped. The Rockefeller Foundation has revealed that it, along with other nonprofits, have been pumping millions of dollars into the behavioral science project meant to figure out why large groups of people around the world refuse to take the jab. Okay, so they're plotting and they're planning and they're scheming. What resistance there was got their attention. But these people aren't going away, is my point to you. There's big money behind this. There's big control behind this. There's big agendas going on to force this. Remember, IMF Lagarde said that this condition is how the economy will function. Well, the economy is really your control in an austere way. 66 degrees and no better. 3 years in jail threat in some places. If you have it, they will go blackout on you. We'll teach you a lesson. We'll blame it on the weather. We'll blame it on Putin. Yet you're freezing to death. Rockefeller Foundation wants behavioral science. I've been telling you forever relative to this political change, this climate change, political change, climate change. It is the only thing, the transformation. They need you to behave correctly when they get you, and they need to have you behave correctly to get you in. And they work really hard. If you don't think that these people have the power to convince you, you're not appreciating what advertisement does. You're not appreciating Edward Bernays. What he did to women blew me away. Before my time, but watching how that worked out. You appeal to the needs of people and you win them over. I want to be a reward customer. Anyway, the Rockefeller Foundation didn't get what they want, apparently. They want more. And this is not even a new story. I just want to point out it's being found out by other people. You can read about it if you hadn't heard it before. There's something called the Mercury Project, which is a collective of behavioral scientists which are being tapped, and on and on. This thing doesn't go away. And eventually by attrition, I think, over time, for like America, it'll be attrition. They take us out by attrition. There's just not that many people left that can be of any force and effect or help to themselves even. And what they're trying to do and move this along, to move that agenda along, the Event 2201 or whatever the heck, and keep going, the endless diseases, to bring on FDA to authorize a new, what do I call that, booster shot to a moronic variant without trials on humans. Now, I looked at that and said, but they didn't, that there was no trials of the first time, first three times. It was all a big, giant experiment. So they're continuing the process. They're just telling everybody. So the moronic variant is going to have boosters without any trials. Well, that's the whole COVID fraud was a big experiment without trials. It was the trial. And we watched how it's destroying people. They're watching how they're decarbonizing things. How they set you up for the takedown. All the stories that we're hearing about, is coming around. People just falling over dead. New syndromes. It's just nonsense that we keep, oh, that's not, it can't be that. And the FDA is there to plunder and do what it's going to do for business. Again, it's about commerce. As I identified not the Rock Group, not the OWL, not even the Little Who of Whoville, the World Health Organization is a broker to commercial business. Well, the WHO is a broker underneath the auspices of the monetary system. We're back to the Lagarde. These things are going to be our economy. And then this story, we heard the Clinton say it, and it continues to go on, which shows you it's not going away. Cradle to grave. Cradle to grave, the massive consolidation of healthcare industry. I talked to you about this when the Obama scare popped up. I said, this is the big monopolization of the healthcare industry. Well, it's finally being written about. Forget personal choice and competition. Like that's been an option. Technocrat operators are busy consolidating healthcare into a monopoly that will dictate all health treatments and outcomes for the vast majority of Americans. And this consolidation is similar to that seen in agriculture and banking. Yes, everything in your life has the same consolidation factor, the same monopolization, as written there by Technocracy News editor. And he'll tell you more about this. He talks about the Inflation Reduction Act, joining healthcare and climate change. The big confluence going on. The path toward global totalitarianism has been paved with tax dollars. That's the leverage funding I was talking about. So he's identified it. We identified it. We sued because of it. The system defaulted out on the lawsuit. And I don't know what more to tell you. This Inflation Reduction Act, they called it, was actually a climate change, a political change act, political transformation act, and it is a massive leverage funding scheme that aids the economical plunder. Not the economics. It's an economical plunder. How profitable they are to quickly and easily take you down, to take you out. It's an economical plunder through the creation of these digital gulags, as I said earlier. Talked about right here in this article. Cradle to grave. This is what Clinton was talking about. If you think these ideas are new, this has been, 30 years ago they were talking about this stuff. This is all how to take advantage. And we have this story popping up. This started to come to my mind when I was taking care of an elder woman, and then somebody got jealous or something, called the senior services on me, and I had to go to battle with them a long time ago. And I looked in their system then. I didn't have a clue about it. I was just taking care of a lady and a bunch of properties for a friend. And then got myself involved with having to deal with senior services and found out they're one of the primary plunder groups. They come in to help the seniors, and then they go after the property. That was what they were after, because the property I was taking care of was pretty nice. They could care less about taking care of the senior. That we have now, it's moving down to nursing homes. Nursing homes are suing friends and family over residents over unpaid medical bills. So those of you that, again, another place you have to be wary about doing things for people. More than 100 million people living in the United States have some form of medical debt, and 1 in 7 of them say that they have been threatened with a lawsuit or arrest. It is estimated that 1.5 million people live in nursing homes in the United States, and according to NPR, Rochester investigator, nursing homes in the area, along with some other homes elsewhere in the nation, are suing friends and family residents in an attempt to collect unpaid debts held by the resident, despite federal regulations that are designed to prevent such action. If you're interested in looking at what these folks do and the plunder that the private partnerships do, despite the law, you need to pick this up and start preparing yourself as we roll into older age and we sign someone in because they can't, and all of a sudden we're found to be liable, even though they're not supposed to be able to do that. You have to understand these different sections of law, because there's people out there that are taking advantage, and the government is not stopping it despite that there's supposed to be a law against it. You sit here, pause. This is all the different vulnerabilities our society's allowing into itself. Hospital and drug maker move to build vast database of New Yorkers' DNA. Not even maybe a new story, but this is now organized. Patients will be asked if their genetic sequence can be added to the database. We have 123 and me or whatever the heck it is. I told you all about how that wasn't going to work. The Mount Sinai Health System. We keep returning to these people. Began an effort this week to build a vast database of patient genetic information that can be studied by researchers and by large pharmaceutical companies. And remember, they do a cDNA adjustment to your stuff and they own it. They make an mRNA and they put it in your body hybridize it, they own it. And so they know where the future money is, and they're working through Ancestry.com and GED Match and all this other stuff. All to set up the plunder, give them a private right of action to do anything that they want. And we're walking into this blissfully, I suppose. They take your goodwill and they turn it into some kind of a thing that they can make a profit in. First came 9/11, then the COVID-19, the what's next crisis to lock down the nation. So this article, again, by John Rutherford, he comes to the point I told you a long time ago about this connection where it starts at 9/11. And I appreciated the statement that he goes through in the beginning. I'm just going to go to the point. He says, frankly, and this is what I think the takeaway about all of this is and why we really need to be careful about how we address this and how you defeat the prime mover. In this case, he'll get to national security. You have to figure out ways to get rid of the police power. Anybody should go look in the definition of police power. Just go look and you'll see it's not by itself a power. It comes with the protection of due process, which I was telling you to go ahead and enforce by the law. But what John talks about here is, frankly, it doesn't matter what the nature of the next national emergency might be, terrorism, civil unrest, economic collapse, a healthcare scare, or something of the environment, as long as it follows the government to lock down the nation and justify all manner of tyranny in the so-called name of national security. Cue the emergency state. And this is exactly what I told you. I said exactly this point. Someone figured out they could use this emergency power in order to take us down. And then I went to work when I realized that years and years ago to say, well, how would you circumvent that? As difficult as that is, how do you circumvent it? The thing I came up with is you go to the existing black and white that hasn't been changed or can't be changed. It's already there that the executive has to follow, and you make sure they follow it. And I think I'm very consistent over the years here to tell you that. And it comes up again right in his writing explaining they can come by any name and cause. It's going to be up to you to show that's a fraud, in my estimation, show it's a fraud. That can get very difficult. The more they do this, the more they learn, the more behavioral scientists, so-called, they put in, the more experts they put in on this, the more intelligence they gather to be able to defeat the most of us. So the emergency state, they bring it right to the ground where you live. I've been noticing more and more of these studies. I've been a little concerned for us. We see now a couple of stories I just want to point to. National security, the government seems to kind of allow this but not allow it. But it's happening around us. I don't know why it started to happen. Maybe people living in bigger places have seen it for a lot longer. We talk about the Chicago murders and Detroit murders and all this other stuff, but this is becoming really more off-handed. I don't know what to say, what the word is. It's just a surprise. I'm telling people to keep a sharp eye out anymore. Memphis thug live streams himself on Facebook murdering strangers at random. The black male reportedly identified a 19-year-old Ezekiel Kelly and live streamed himself Wednesday on Facebook driving around Memphis and shooting strangers at random. You can read the story. Another story here. Maryland County to enforce youth curfew after armed and dangerous children spark murderous month. Now, I don't know what's happening to our youngins. I mean, we can blame it on no fathers, I guess, or we can blame it on whatever, no school, whatever. We can blame it on even the jab, whatever. The problem is that you're walking down the street and something like this goes on. A group of youngsters got nothing better to do, come and attack you. I guess the point here, I don't know what really the answer is, but be aware. If you can give yourself even a few seconds of distance, it might help you. You might be able to see far enough ahead to stay away. It's random. It's popping up. It's becoming a problem. They're putting curfews. Again, there's a problem. Now someone else has stopped youth curfews. Your youngin, who's not a problem, now can no longer exist more free because of these things, and the government can't stop it. The problem is people are dying around. I can't even fathom this stuff in some regard, how this is developing. I mean, I guess we could point to lots of places. There's no guidance. And that, again, trying to bring people back, find a guidance for yourself and start to example that to others. I don't know what else we can do in the time being, especially when these people, they come into the color of authority and they do this stuff. This is the other thing. Over 50 Biden administration employees, 12 U.S. agencies involved in social media censorship push document. So we see here where the government itself, again, is inside of the system. We know about government censorship, but now we're seeing it's more intimate. We're seeing that it has a direct influence. We're seeing that it's very powerful. Again, the modernization of Schmidt Munt. Remember, I said modernization when we talked about that. I said that's just helping the new transformation of tyranny. And there it is. And so we have the government now working across the administration. More than 50 officials of President Biden's administration across dozens of agencies have been involved in efforts to pressure big tech companies to crack down on alleged misinformation. And yet we hear that the professor had the right to give information for the public interest. So when do you have your say? It's going to be interesting in the future where the bureaucrat has the presumptive right. Uncovering the army of federal censors. The author Aaron Carity, I've recently posted twice on the case of Missouri versus Biden, in which the states of Missouri and Louisiana, along with four private plaintiffs, including the author, represented the Civil Liberties Alliance, are suing the Biden administration for alleged free speech violations, specifically the executive branch of the government, who is colluding with social media to censor any content on the social media platforms, which we know, I won't name them, any content that questions and challenges that contradicts the government's COVID policies. So again, it takes people to press against this. My view on that is, okay, there's a lawsuit going on COVID policies. The government, federal government, had no right to have a policy. What you had to do would be go to the local government and show that they didn't do what the law required to be able to do anyone to anything to anyone, which is the root of it all. Anyone, you get dealt with one-on-one basis. And based on people pushing and stepping up and doing things as best they can to highlight these problems, showing that the government was part and parcel with the fraud, to press that why it became so big, how it was so universal. But we press and we see a judge orders Fauci and the White House press secretary to hand over records related to online censorship and pressure. Again, as we move in the future, what's going to happen in the future? As John Whitehead said, we won't give it any name. The point is we're going to have to learn that these people in the government do this stuff and have to go right to that, go look for this stuff immediately to start extracting out the deception. It's going to take more and be more to do as this thing goes on. I'm hoping people rise up to the occasion. Or we're going to be seeing, again, the digital gulag will be controlling your life. You'll be living in 66-degree weather in the middle of winter. You'll be not eating food for a while or whatever. You'll be getting the minimums if you get that. You'll be doing things and can't go do things and have to wait some time. You won't be able to buy cars with engines that run efficiently and do work efficiently. You're going to stand around for the charging cord to be used to come up from somebody to be used. But the United States District Court of Western District of Louisiana issued a ruling ordering Dr. Fauci and the White House Press Secretary to respond to documents requests for the new Civil Liberties Alliance in conjunction with the Missouri, the Louisiana attorney. This would not have happened without this lawsuit. Now, I don't know what their object is. My point is I just see people, there are some people out there doing things, and you can too. And maybe not this level, but just about anywhere, any level. Just start engaging. YouTube quietly dropped some COVID censorship policies, but banned channels haven't returned. Over the last few months, YouTube has quietly removed or changed many of its COVID censorship rules, which resulted in numerous videos and creators being censored throughout 2020 and 2021. Did you hear about the changes? No, but they're doing it. Why? If it was supposed to be right, they shouldn't be able to make the changes, but they are. I've said they were unconscionable. We've sent back a couple of times where the YouTube took away my broadcast, and got them returned. Sometimes we didn't. Now these things are supposed to be reduced. Now they're not going to be enforcing them. This is the problem of people say, well, I wasn't doing anything wrong. Well, you're not one day, then you are next day, then you're not the other. Well, that's not really law. And moving on over real quickly into some new stuff that's kind of interesting, why you got to be careful how much you make illegal and how much you don't, what censorship can do, how it stifles things. And I'm not much into them myself, but I understand they work great for those that need it. The combination of psychedelics and therapy appears to help people with alcoholism cut down on the number of days per month they drink heavily. Researchers use psilocybin, the psychedelic compound found in magic mushrooms, to treat patients over 8 months and saw dramatic improvements in participants' drinking habits. I want to bring up, this is the point that doctors had to do this in order to try and give a use for this so they can pull it off the Schedule One. So this is another view that sometimes you can't attack something directly. There's going to be a standard the bureaucrat's going to have to look at to have it work through, and then you have to do the studies. If you don't do the studies, there's no cause. It's like the problem and the opposite nature of why they did a dual use provision, and that what I'm so critical of Rand Paul allowing Fauci to make that record, to make the record that gave the exception to allow these experimental chemistries and private properties to harm people. Now we find natural products, when given the space, don't censor them first. Let's do some tests. Let's find out what they do. They can help people. So I'm encouraged that this way worked for people. We now also do another type of study. Find out dogs produce tears when reunited with owners, study finds. If you're a canine companion, ain't nothing but a hound dog crying all the time. It may be because they are brimming with emotion. A very neat little story here. I think maybe anybody with a dog can see the joy within a dog. It doesn't kind of show it the same way, but researchers in Japan say that they found that dogs produce tears when reuniting with their owners. What's more, the bubbling appears to be linked with the levels of bonding hormone, oxytocin. That's very interesting. We have the same chemistry, right? This is the first report demonstrating the positive emotion stimulates tear secretion in a non-human animal and the oxytocin function in tear secretion. Pretty cool. Thought that was pretty fun to watch, to see. Who knows, these creatures that we have around us, a little bit like us, and not, right? So I guess that's right to the end of this now. I'm to the end of what I wanted to talk about. So maybe I'd say a real thing that's in the news. I'll throw this in, too. Why stacking chips like pancakes could mean a massive advance in the laptops. This is kind of interesting because a long time ago when I was in R&D, I had an idea of stacking chips when I noticed that we'd stack chips inside on boards. Here it is today, so many decades later, they're actually working on making like chips that the processors that they stack up and make them more efficient and faster for you, actually for your processes, actually to surveil you, actually to make it easier and more economically for them to do that. Hope something I said today helps you, gets you motivated, understand the world as it's coming fast at us, so maybe step out the way, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
And a whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.